The Prime Minister of Lebanon has offered his resignation, but that does not mean that he has resigned. Some Lebanese may welcome this news, but that doesn't solve Lebanon's economic problems. In this edition of The Debate, we will discuss where is Lebanon heading to, how will this potential resignation benefit Lebanon, and more importantly, how long will the political transition take place since time is not on Lebanon's side. Before that, let's get an update from Press TV's Mariam Saleh in Beirut about reactions to Hadidi's offer of resignation. Mariam, what do you have for us?
Well, what we do have right now is a sense of vagueness, and it's a sense of people just observing, waiting to see what's going to happen. The resignation came at a time that was a shock. Hadidi said it, well, he wanted it to be a positive shock on the streets. Well, he made a positive shock, I think. Not a positive shock, but it was a shock for everyone, whether on the street or in the political factions. And they all were surprised and said that this was not done in consultation with the president, which is usually done as it's traditionally done in the Constitution. This is one thing. Another thing is that where could things be heading? Who will be named? And we know for sure from reports that the president will not name Hariri. And many are seeing this as not as resolution. This could not solve issues. And Hariri probably had other reasons why he resigned. Now, who will be named as in the cabinet as prime minister and how the cabinet will be formed? This could take some time because the president needs to hold consultations with the parliamentarians, with parliamentary blocs and the members of parliament, and they need to name someone. And it seems that most of the political factions will not name Hariri as opposed to what would have happened before, changing the faces in the cabinet. We're going to have a new parliamentary, new prime minister. The economic issues are considered to be by all protesters here and also, and even those who are against the protesters or against blocking roads, saying that the economic crisis was a result of decades of lack of management and mismanagement by those political class. And where the country could be heading is still not clear, but we know the four to more, we're going to have more civil strike, we're going to have maybe perhaps blocking of roads and closing of banks as well.
Thank you for that. I absolutely appreciate it. Our guest joining us with this edition of The Debate, political commentator Ali Risk, joins us from Beirut. We have a professor of law and political science at NDU University, Eugene Sensenik, who joins us from Byblos. I'd like to welcome you both. Ali Risk, let me start with you. A basic question: what does Hariri's resignation mean for Lebanon and the crisis that it's entangled in? Will it not complicate the situation?
Well, it means basically that Lebanon has entered into a power vacuum. It's interesting what we just heard from the correspondent Mariam Saleh. Indeed, I also heard that the President Aoun, and his, those surrounding him are extremely unhappy with the way this resignation was made, because as was mentioned, traditionally, the traditional practice is that the Prime Minister usually goes and submits it or makes his case to the President, then announces his resignation instead of doing it on TV and catching the President by surprise. I was also informed before this interview by Hezbollah sources that Hezbollah, you know, was not consulted with before this resignation. So this would indeed, I think, make it clear that it's extremely unlikely that Hariri will be named once again to form a new cabinet. Now we're in a state of power vacuum yet again in Lebanon. Lebanon already is suffering from a very, very dire situation, you know, economically, financially. The power vacuum now will only make things go worse. So Lebanon, I think, is headed for even more tough times, unfortunately.
Well, Eugene Sensenik, if you take a look at the way that, obviously, first, as we heard, Hariri to have not consulted the president on this, why do you think he took that decision? And if we are in a situation of a power vacuum, what are the next steps to be taken to fill that?
Well, it's important to point out that we are in a power vacuum, that's true, but we're not in a legal vacuum, if you will. There are constitutional mechanisms foreseen for this kind of thing. There will be a caretaker government. So from a legal perspective, we're fine, but from a political power perspective and economically, and as far as the relationship with between the government and civil society is concerned, and I would add with the commercial sector, we have a lot of problems. I think Hariri is much weaker than his father. He never was able to fill his father's shoes. And he is, if you will, one of the weakest links in the government. Ironically, he has to be, or someone from the Sunni population has to be prime minister. So there's no way around, if you will, at the moment, the Hariri dynasty. Personally, I think that most likely the president will reappoint him as president because there's no heir apparent besides Hariri at the moment. But I don't see the situation as dire as many are portraying it, but I think we're in a very strong period of transition.
Okay, Ali West, our guest, interestingly, says that he doesn't see the situation as dire. And also he says that since the president does not have any other choices, that Hariri will remain in that post. Do you agree?
Not necessarily, no. Before I answer that question, just let me point out that just to give you a clue about how bad the situation is, both the French foreign minister and the German foreign minister said that Hariri's resignation makes the situation even worse. Now, the Europeans have been very, very worried about yet another, you know, problem in Lebanon, you know, that could lead to a refugee influx towards Europe. So I think when the Europeans issue this warning, that says a lot. You know, regarding whether or not I agree, I have to, with all due respect, disagree with Dr. Eugene. I think that this is a dire situation. And I also don't agree that Hariri will necessarily be named. It's possible he will be, but I think it's unlikely he'll be named again. I was told by somebody, I'm not sure how credible this information is, but I was told by someone that one of the names or one of the people who could be named to put together a cabinet would be Interior Minister Ray Al-Hassan. Again, this is the Lebanese Minister of Interior, a female, by the way. Now, if that does happen, that'll be the first time in history we have a female Prime Minister designate. As I said, I was informed of this by one source. I have no idea if it's true or not. But I really think it's unlikely that Hariri is going to be named again. I think that, you know, there are huge disagreements now. Lebanon's defense minister, Elias Boussaab, who is known to be part of Michel Aoun's team, if you would like, came out and said that this was done without any consultation and that this step taken by Hariri was a mistake. So there's obvious dismay from the president's team towards Hariri, and I think the same would apply for Hezbollah. And so, again, you know, that further limits Hariri's chances of being chosen once again.
Well, Dr. Eugene Sensenig, can you please tell us, given the fact that now that Hariri has made this announcement, what led to him doing it aside from the protest? Because we heard that due to the crisis, many of Hariri's allies within parliament basically emptied out and did not support Hariri anymore and threw a distance and basically started pointing the finger at him, which led to perhaps Hariri's fall, something perhaps they wanted to happen in order for Hariri to take the blame for the corruption perhaps that is going on in the cabinet or in parliament. Is that a correct assertion? Is that what happened?
First of all, I don't think Hariri should be prime minister. I think that that's the most likely scenario. A female prime minister would be wonderful. She has my vote. I don't think that there is any way that the ministers and the corrupt elites in Lebanon can pin the blame on Hariri. Hariri is not corrupt. Hariri is corruption, if you will. But that goes for most of the leaders in Lebanon across the board. And that's one of the calls of the people on the street is that it's everyone, that is everyone. So I think that that is the crisis at the moment, that the leadership is not clean. There really are very few people who can step in who have a clean shirt, if you will, a clean vest. I think the crisis right now is not so much the past as it is the present and looking into the future. One, if the government, the newly formed lame duck or caretaker government is serious about reforms, there are so many issues from oil and natural gas to transportation to debt to health and education, water and power, that they can work on seriously with civil society. The second thing I think is a big problem is civil society itself. We have two issues here. One is a lot of the people in civil society have never been heard, and this is their moment. I think these people can play a great role with the caretaker government. However, civil society should never try to be part of the government. That's the whole definition of civil society. It's non-governmental. So this temptation, which is being offered now by some of the politicians to bring them into the government, should be resisted, because that's not what civil society is all about. And second of all, there's a lot of people. We have a word in English is called a wryneck. It's a bird that can turn its head 180 degrees. There's a lot of people who are turning their heads now to pretend like they're part of the opposition. And we have to watch out for them as well.
Ali Risk, the most immediate crisis facing the country, it's multifaceted, but it's something that the central bank governor stated in an interview when asked about how bad a situation is Lebanon in economically. And he said that the country is close to bankruptcy within days. Lebanon does not have time. What kind of approach can be taken right now at this juncture when you have the central bank governor stating this, which, by the way, I do need to find out from you, since he's been at the helm for quite some time, if he is to blame for a lot of the problems that Lebanon is experiencing?
Well, the first step would be for life to go back to some kind of, you know, normal. Banks have been closed ever since this crisis began, which it's been about 2 weeks now. And so to save the country, first and foremost, you have to restore life to back how it was. Banks need to open once again, because if this continues a few more days, I think we'll indeed reach a state of collapse. You know, people have been complaining, not just about there was no bread is going to run out very soon, gasoline. These are all issues, by the way. This shortage was all caused, you know, there was a problem before the protest movement, if you want to call them protests. But because of the protests, because of blocking of roads, the problem became a lot more severe. As to your question about Riyad Salemi, yes, there are many people who say that Riyad Salemi has played a very negative role, that the banking sector in general in Lebanon has been stealing the Lebanese people. That is an accusation which has been made time and again. We also have to wait and see what they're going to do about that. But again, I have to emphasize, if you want to get the country, you know, running up or back on its own feet to a certain level, the first thing the protesters have to do is to, you know, put a stop to these acts of acting like vigilantes, blocking roads. I think that's the way they could help the country.
What are the protesters' demands, cumulatively speaking, right now? If you don't mind telling us, Eugene Sensenig, has this offer of resignation by Hariri going to quell them, appease them, or are they going to continue with what they're doing in terms of how you view the protesters and the demands that they have met, which are so many?
Well, first of all, I do agree with Ali that we'd have to get back to normal now. The roads have to be cleared. The banks have to be opened. I want to go back to work. Second of all, I'm not going to talk about the protesters, because I'm one of them. I've been regularly down in Biblos protesting with my friends and family. And I can tell you what we are demanding. First and foremost, an end to corruption. Secondly, competent government mechanisms dealing with the core issues, which I mentioned before: water, electricity, education, healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. These are issues that Lebanon doesn't have problems. Lebanon has a very, very well-educated middle class. It has a very hardworking working class. It has lots of capital reserves from the diaspora. That's the good news, that Lebanon can solve its problems like this. The problem is, Lebanon can solve its problems like this, but it doesn't want to. They want to keep the problems. It's in the vested interests of the elites to keep the problems in order to maintain the patron-client relationship. Keep them on their knees, and they'll be beholden to their Zaim, to their Zuama, to their warlords and their robber barons. So I think this is the core issue, and that's why everybody's saying kill them, kill them. That means everybody who's on the top is causing these problems. Now, the government resigning hasn't solved anything, because that just means that they've admitted that they have to do something in the future. Now they have to roll up their sleeves. I think that some of the ministers should stay in office, work with civil society, which should resist the temptation to become part of the government. Let's start working. We can start with some core issues like water and electricity, healthcare and education, which we don't have.
Interesting. Well, Ali Risk, let me get into this question by stating what Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has said, and it's part of a statement that he said someone is trying to pull Lebanon towards a civil war, which gives suggestions. This is something that was quoted, which gives suggestions, obviously, that there has been either foreign powers who are funding perhaps some of the aspects of these protests for their own political gain. Who are the winners, outside powers, who may be trying to ride this political wave that's happening in Lebanon, in your opinion?
First of all, you know, when I talk about vigilantes, I don't mean to say that all protesters are vigilantes. You know, I respect Dr. Eugene, and I wasn't meaning all protesters. Regarding your question, an important factor here is Saudi Arabia. You know, Saudi Arabia, Saad Hariri fell out of favor with Saudi Arabia. There were problems, big problems, between Saudi Arabia and Saad Hariri. In fact, Saudi Arabia has cut off funding from Saad Hariri, according to what we hear. So that would mean that Saudi Arabia is a strong candidate to play that role which you just mentioned in your question, meaning Saudi Arabia maybe has an interest in destabilizing the situation. It probably also has played a big role in Hariri resigning. We also know that Saudi Arabia is currently on good terms with Samir Jarjar. Samir Jarjar, who is the leader of Lebanese forces, well known for his collaboration with Israel in the past, well known for someone who's committed massacres. So in answering your question, I think that Saudi Arabia maybe is the first and foremost beneficiary, in addition to Israel. And by the way, if you look at Israeli media, the Israelis have been expressing a lot of joy over what's been happening over the past few days, particularly because many of the protesters have been chanting slogans against Hezbollah and against Hezbollah's weapons. So that's also, I think, an aspect which we have to shed light on.
Well, Dr. Eugene, since you say that you were in the protest, there was one particular incident that was circulating on social media. And it pointed out to a day when it was raining, and all of a sudden umbrellas came out and was handed out to people, thousands of them. And somebody said that if you calculate each umbrella to cost $10, then it comes out to a lot of money. That was all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but the umbrellas were passed out all of a sudden, as if there's somebody funding these protests. Is that an indication of foreign powers, or are there certain political groups in Lebanon who might want these protests to continue?
Well, first of all, and I often agree with Ali, and I agree with him in this point as well, beware of Saudis bearing gifts. Anytime Saudi Arabia gets involved in anything around the world, it usually doesn't turn out very well for the people who are receiving their largesse. Second of all, this issue of funding has come up again and again. Lebanon has a long history, as we know, and a lot of the funding that comes to Lebanon is coming from religious foundations, from large commercial families, Sursuk, et cetera, over the centuries. So there are a lot of wealthy benefactors who have been involved in all kinds of movements, and I'm not surprised if they would be putting their money into this as well. As far as foreign interference is concerned, I don't think that they played a role at the beginning. I think that they're probably trying to get involved now to turn it in their direction. I think none of us really know where this is coming from abroad, but I would say that when there's money involved, the Lebanese aren't poor. There's a lot of very, very wealthy Lebanese who are perfectly capable of putting up the sound systems and the tents and buying the umbrellas.
Ali Risk, the issue of corruption is something obviously that has been plaguing Lebanon, and we see it in the protest. When the issue of Hezbollah comes about, however, there's a clean slate there. It's not, that's undeniable. Are Lebanese, I'm curious, they are aware of that and how that stands with them, since Hezbollah is obviously not only part of the government, but is such a large figure in Lebanese politics.
Yes, but you know, we still have the at the same time we have this slogan, all of them means all of them in Arabic, kullun yani, that they want everyone. They you know, they use this corruption labeling, if you would like, and they place every single party under this corruption label, including Hezbollah. And you know what really you know got my attention is that at the beginning, yes, I agree with Dr. Eugene, it was spontaneous. You know, there were economic reforms, but starting at day three, if you would like, you know, the demand started to change. All of a sudden, what was a demand for reform started to include people chanting against Hezbollah's weapons. We've even seen people, you know, direct insults at Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah personally, people on the, those people protesting on the streets. So despite the fact that Hezbollah is maybe the only party not involved in corruption, it still is being targeted. And that's what makes me think that it's very likely we have foreign interference, because it was only about economic grievances and about economic needs. Then why would we have these chants against Hezbollah, and also the mention of Hezbollah's weapons? Because, you know, that issue has nothing to do whatsoever with economic grievances or social reforms or things like that.
So, Dr. Eugene, at this point, looking forward, where is Lebanon headed to? What do you think is going to happen, in particular, obviously, how the president, Aoun, is going to move forward?
Well, first of all, I want to correct one thing or disagree on one thing. Hezbollah is not the only Shia party in Lebanon. And I do agree that Hezbollah is not corrupt, but there's another party involved here which has a reputation of being very corrupt. Second of all, it's not only about corruption, it's about confessionalism and, more importantly, sectarianism, which is the worst form of confessionalism. And here, of course, Hezbollah and Amal are both parties that have strong confessional support. And I think that's what a lot of people mean. They don't mean that all parties are corrupt, but they do mean that all parties are largely supported by a specific religious constituency. And that's what they want to get away with. And I think that's fair, that Hezbollah is obviously primarily a Shia party. And I think all parties, including Hezbollah, should be parties for all of the people and enjoy support from the entire population. As far as the future is concerned, again, I think the big threat right now is that civil society will forget what their real role is, which is to be a partner for the government, to bring in NGOs, to bring in the universities, to bring in the media, and to put the government under pressure. And I think we have a strong partner with the international donors. We haven't talked about CEDRA this time around, but the donors, the $11 billion is closely tied to oil and natural gas and the respect for rule of law. And I think with the civil society and the foreign donors, there can be pressure on the government, and we can actually take this forward towards rule of law.
Eli West, finally to you. Lebanese, I'm guessing, are very smart, the ones who are out on the streets. But then again, the influence that could be coming from the outside, in particular from Saudi Arabia and also from Israel, do you think that they will be able to distinguish what is right for Lebanon as to not be influenced by these foreign powers trying to meddle in Lebanon? In under a minute, if you can, please.
Judging by their performance up until now, no. My answer is no. These protesters, many of them might have good intentions, I don't doubt that, but many of them have been taken up by emotions and enthusiasm. And, you know, revolutions aren't accomplished just by emotions and enthusiasm. You have to set down an agenda. You know, there are many different things. As I said, they've been taken up too much by all of this. Maybe, you know, they thought that they never had this chance, and when it came, they didn't believe themselves. And very quickly, when it comes to sectarianism or you know, confessional system, look, if things were to change, if there was a new law based on non-sectarianism, Hezbollah would welcome that, because Hezbollah, even in such a case, would win hands down. You know, it has broad support, not just amongst the Shia. So Hezbollah wouldn't have any problem in changing the nature of the system here in Lebanon.
Thank you for that, political commentator Eli Risk. And thank you, Professor of Law and Political Science at NDU University, Eugene Senseni from Byblos. And that is it for this edition of The Debate. Thanks for tuning in. Do join us next time for Mikhail Tahwi. It's goodbye.